This meeting is now being recorded.
Hi, this is Brenda speaking for the record, and I just want to welcome everyone to the RDS Who Is Too Compliant. Welcome to the RDS Who Is Too Compliance subgroup meeting with compliance management. This meeting is taking place on February 1st, 2018 at 5 p.m. Pacific time. The meeting is being recorded, so please state your name for the record. Thank you very much. I'll turn it over to you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Brenda. So just to start off this, thank you for meeting with us, and I know it's a busy time for everybody as usual, but this really we viewed as like a kickoff meeting because compliance has changed a lot since I was on the WHO's review team 2010, 11, whenever that was. And so we thought it would be good to just get an overview of who we should be talking to, because what we don't want to do is come in and talk to members of your team that have nothing to do with who is. I mean, this is very narrow, just who is, not even GDPR, you know, all of that we're leaving aside for now. And so I sent you that list of questions. And so it's really a matter of, you know, we did some of our homework on the ICANN website, but it doesn't say who does what, really. So if you can, you've had the document. Sorry, you just got it a few days ago, but again, GDPR is making everybody crazy. So
did you not get Maggie's document?
I sent it last night.
You sent it to me?
To the MSSI team.
Okay.
Asked them to forward it. Did you not?
I do not think.
Brenda, do you know if the document that Maggie sent yesterday went out?
Oh, yeah. I do have that. I apologize for not. Here, I'll put it up right now.
And I'm going to
try questions, correct?
If you could send it to everyone, that would be great.
I'm going to project in the room to guide.
Is this the document you're speaking of? The question?
Yes. That's the document.
Very good.
Dated January 31.
Yes. I can close this. I can make this bigger. So this is Maggie Sarad, for the record. I'm VP of Contractual Compliance. Always a pleasure to work with you, Susan, and, of course, Alan and Carlton. I don't know if you're on the call or not yet. With me in the room, I have Jamie Headland, our senior VP, and Amanda Rose from the Contractual Compliance team. Also from the compliance team joining us from Singapore is Roger Lim. Roger is the director for compliance in Singapore office, and one of his core responsibilities is all topics related to who is.
Perfect.
Now, before I start addressing, we did receive your questions.
Okay.
The first round we received on the 27th of January contained about 19 questions, mm-hmm. and then we received a revised version yesterday morning, had 15. I went ahead and addressed all of them.
Oh, okay.
More is better in my book.
Because we would have gotten to the other ones later anyway.
Exactly, exactly. What I want to ask, just logistic question. You had said if you have future questions, who can you address them to?
Mm-hmm.
And Brenda, maybe this is internal to the MSSI team. My understanding is when there are review teams and working groups, the ICANN org will receive – the departments will receive their questions via the ICANN department that's leading the effort. So in my case, I will receive it via the MSSI team, okay. Someone on Nigar's team or Larissa's team. Mm-hmm. But, of course, always, like I said, always a pleasure to work with you. I just want to make sure I'm following the process.
Yeah, no.
So we can get clarity to who.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to address your question on the bigger, if they say no, talk directly to compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Roger and I will be your point of contact at all times. And the best way also, we have the generic email address, compliance at ICANN.org.
Mm-hmm.
If it's titled properly and the question is addressed, it will come to our attention.
Okay.
Our goal here is to be able to respond to everybody globally and have the right resources pulled in and provided in a timely fashion.
Okay. You can also always email or call me.
Okay. I appreciate that. Hopefully we won't cause a lot of churn.
No.
I didn't want to offer you, Jamie, but I'm glad you offered it.
Absolutely.
Brenda, can I have presentation, so I can kind of move the document up and down as I, oh, I do. You gave me a presentation, right?
And I'm just going to take notes.
Okay.
Sure. Shopping.
So the subgroup, basically the document you sent was a very, the first title was Understand the Structure of Compliance.
Right.
And how we deal with who is. I grouped the questions by category.
Okay.
I thought it would be very valuable to talk about the compliance department first.
Okay.
Address your questions about us as employees, management, team members, how we work, and how do we function in that space. As I mentioned in the document, and you'll have access to it, our headcount mm-hmm. is very much aligned with the approved and adopted budget. And I've added the link here to share with you.
Okay.
Basically, we are totally approved for 27 headcount. Now, if you go and look at our website, we list all of our employees by their names and their title.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, like you said, it's not easy for you to tell who is dealing with what.
Right.
And we do that on purpose, yeah. Not to confuse you. We do that because our team, when we first onboard any new staff member to the compliance department, everybody starts their training in the basic foundation of who is related matters.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Because we think of who is as the foundation of everything we deal with as it relates to the DNS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we are approved for 27 headcounts. If you count us on our website, you will see 25. Because we have two positions that, one in Singapore and one in Los Angeles. And the positions are open because we have one transfer to a different department within ICANN as a growth, and we have a person who left us in Singapore to pursue different career opportunities.
Right.
We are fortunate that with Jamie and Yoran, we're able to maintain those headcounts and hire for them, backfill.
Right.
So it's a backfill, not new positions. Now, the compliance function, and I've been meaning to update our website to explain that, and I will add a narrative in the near future on that. The compliance function, if you've followed us since 2011,
mm-hmm.
you're right, we've changed a lot. We've structured the function to really focus on these three core areas. What I mean by core areas is contractual compliance, focus on registrars and registries from an operational perspective.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure we are enforcing the contract, we are doing what we call a proactive and a reactive approach. Reactive approach deals with all the complaints we receive. Proactive approach deals with the monitoring and the activities we do.
Okay.
So one leg of the compliance is the registrar and registry function. Another leg is the audit function, mm-hmm. which you've probably heard us give updates on.
Mm-hmm.
We created a dedicated team of two. And you can tell from the titles, hopefully, that they are focused on audit.
Okay.
Their role is also a full knowledge of both RA, the registry agreement, and the registrar accreditation agreement. So they have an in-depth knowledge of all, and they work directly with the contracted parties for that function. Another critical area in contractual compliance is everything about performance measurement and reporting. As you recall, one of the big things I was tasked in 2011 when I first met you is to bring transparency to the compliance function and reporting of data. So we created a dedicated resource to that function, and she reports directly to me. And in that function, this person works across the compliance team, because when we're pulling metrics, we work with them to QA, to validate, and to report on them. So that's what the compliance function consists of. And like I said earlier, one of your questions is how many people work on who is inaccuracy? I am pleased to tell you, God forbid, if we are slammed with some critical urgency on who is inaccuracy related matters, the entire team can get in a war room and can roll up their sleeve and work on who is inaccuracy.
Oh, okay.
They have all been trained. They are all yes to process in that area.
So do you cross-train the team for any other core functions?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Who is inaccuracy is one area of the contract that we follow and we take seriously, but the contract consists of many other areas. So we start training in who is inaccuracy, and the team starts building their skill set in other areas like transfer, who is format, who is available, who is services, everything else. And if you want to learn what are all the complaints that we have, it's published on our website under the complaint submission, every area. Now, there is no way possible everybody can learn everything on day one or day two or day three. So we have a path. Exactly. I'm still learning after six, almost 7 years at ICANN. So we have a development path for the compliance department. And the development path is dependent on the knowledge required, because we can't put somebody to start looking, for example, at big DRPs immediately. You have to learn the foundation. We start in the registrar space, grow the team across in the registrar area, and then start training them in the registry space. The reason we do that is very, very simple. Scalability is the first thing. There's no way we can hire just specific to a function or a complaint type or one area in the complaint. But also, in addition to scalability, we also want to keep the team to continue to grow and learn and develop in their skill sets to become what we call truly knowledgeable in the full scope of the registrar accreditation agreement, the policies in the registrar space, and then eventually in the registry space. Now, you do need to have a focused oversight and management of different areas.
Yeah.
We've taken the different contracts and we split them up like who is inaccuracy. Roger from Singapore is the director. Now, in his capacity today, he is leading and he is what I call accountable for compliance, who is related matters. Before him, it was Owen.
Okay. Okay.
So, again, our goal is to rotate by bringing more knowledge and skill sets to the different team members.
Yeah.
Roger, as a functional lead for all who is related matters, has subject matter experts that are overseeing the quality reviews and the management of the complaints and escalation points amongst the team who are all yes to process. So when a department member, a team member, becomes a yes to process, the complaints that we receive in the system, it comes into the different buckets. And if you are yes to process, the person is empowered to just go and take the tickets. Our goal is to have the team able to go and select. By taking a look, they can see, oh, there is a lot of activities in the who is inaccuracy queue. I need to focus and start processing here.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a lot of activities in the transfer queue, and I'm trained here, and I'm yes to process. They shift without us micromanaging the activities there.
Oh, that makes sense.
What we want to manage is the escalations, the exceptions, and the qualities. So the subject matter experts are different team members like Amanda sitting here with us today. She's the subject matter expert in the LA office for all who is inaccuracy-related matters. Now, before it was another person. And again, these positions, we try to rotate within a year or two so the team members develop skill sets across other areas.
Mm-hmm.
We have subject matter experts also in who is inaccuracy in the Istanbul office and in the Singapore office.
Oh, okay.
The three individuals work directly with Roger in dealing with exception, in dealing with big pictures, in dealing with quality reviews, and making sure that they are aligned and they are supporting the rest of the team when they come to them.
Okay.
So make sure I have addressed. So the only question I have not addressed here is number six now. How are issues brought to attention to other team members? I shared with you how we are now, we are structured as a team. How are issues brought to team members is communications.
Okay.
We have several communication means. Depends on the urgency of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
People pick up the phone or Skype or FaceTime. It depends what time zone we're in. That's how we established it in this structure. And many of our areas are established in this structure to be able to provide the service worldwide without waiting on Singapore to wake up or LA to wake up. Because if you singly just locate that expertise in one area or one individual, we kind of like, you know, hurting ourselves.
Right.
So communication starts basically email or phone call. It depends what the issue we're dealing with. But the compliance team also has what we call structured stand-up operational meeting. We call them stand-up, but we do sit down. It's the team, the ops team, the entire ops team gathers. It's like a 15-minute. It's like manufacturing. I know people tell me. I do come from manufacturing.
Engineering,
yes. Mm-hmm. We huddle. What issues are you seeing in your area? Which registrar? What flow is happening? What are the exceptions? It's just keeping everybody informed verbally. The call starts with the Singapore team, and we capture everything through our collaborative tool.
Okay.
Online. Istanbul comes on. They check the notes from Singapore, and they hold their own operations meeting. LA comes on a couple of hours later or 10 hours later. We do the same thing. We look at the ops meeting minutes from Singapore, from Istanbul, and we say, okay, is everybody clear on these issues? Mm-hmm. Have you seen anything in LA related to that? And we update the notes. So worldwide, the communication is clearly communicated. And it's not only who is in accuracy.
Right.
It could be what's in the pipeline. What are the trends we're seeing? Or, hey, heads up, I'm calling these registrars today. Is there anything else going on that I can combine in the call? It could be whatever discussion the team wants to talk about.
Okay, that makes sense. Sure.
Amanda, anything else you want to add in there?
Or the subject matter experts also have a standing meeting about once a month just to discuss recent trends and anything that we've seen kind of in various tickets. So that gives us an opportunity to bring up any issues that we've seen that might not be discussed in the ops or the operational meetings.
Okay.
So in addition to the ops meeting, I hold a weekly all-hands meeting for compliance. It's not my direct reports only. The entire team. Our goal is to make sure everybody is informed of all compliance-related matters, whether they are trained in it, knowledgeable in it, or not. Mm. The reason for that is because, as you know, the contracts have touch points. The issues can have other impacts. So by keeping the team informed, then they can be more sensitive to what's happening in the environment. But also, it's an opportunity for them to start learning new things as they grow and develop.
Right.
So these are what I call structured communications of keeping each other informed. Of course, you always have people stopping in, whether it's in our offices or whatever.
Right.
Whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
We're always accessible. Another structure we've implemented is having this functional structure and subject matter experts, as you heard. The team also coordinates vacation leave and any kind of leave because we want to make sure we have coverage.
Right.
We don't want the entire who is SMEs and functional leave to be on vacation. Now, we're capable of handling, but we want them to always be, to somebody be available.
Right.
So we have a very disciplined approach to the discipline of compliance
and
the structure of the team.
Well, this is a lot different than our discussion 6 years ago or seven or whatever.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I think we had a handful of...
Yeah, I was in for year five of the department.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
And we didn't have the different functions. It was just focused. You had a couple of people on who is, a couple of people here.
And you had very little... you had very little tools.
Yes, you know, and when you think of tools, I think of tools in all aspects. I think me as a human being is a tool too for in this area. My brain.
Online tools help you.
We have online tools, yes, and we continue. I think if you're following the ICANN organization initiatives, you know, we're launching the enterprise solution where we're going to have a central tool for all ticketing systems and registrars and registries. We're not there yet. Because there's a planned approach to it. They're doing registries first, and then registrars, and then compliance comes on board. Have we answered the what I call compliance function questions?
Yeah, I think
employment,
so.
Employees. Sorry, not employment.
So
team structure.
Let's and Alan or Lisa or anybody, please jump in. you have questions. So basically it's Roger and Amanda, and you said you had somebody in Istanbul?
Yes.
And so are there people underneath you that work on Who Is, or?
Yeah, everyone that does, like, at least ticket processing, so other than the audit team and the performance and measurement staff will learn Who Is and accuracy, and I believe everyone processes tickets. So generally, if there's any questions or unusual tickets, they'll bring it to the subject matter experts.
Okay.
And then the subject matter experts also do any learning for new employees that are starting out. So
okay.
like Maggie said, they'll start with Who Is and accuracy. So everyone is trained and able to take tickets, and because of the volume that's there,
mm-hmm.
everyone usually has at least.
You could have over 20 people.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Focusing on Who Is if
yes.
things were really bad that day.
Yep.
Okay.
We've done war zones in the past. What I call war zone is, you know, we all work for food. We bring food, pizza usually, it's easier. And we huddle in one room and we hit it. Everybody's doing nothing but Who Is in accuracy. Again, it depends on what is it we're facing and what is it we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But the team is very skilled and knowledgeable to go take the tickets and process them.
Okay.
And I know you're taking notes of Roger's name and Amanda, but in six
right.
months from now, if I tell you it's somebody else, I don't want you to be surprised, because
right.
we do rotate, because they are all skilled and able to do that.
Right. No, and that makes sense. People
Maggie, it's Alan. How are the 27 people divided over the three offices?
In Istanbul, Alan, we have four team members. In it's on the website, and I don't know if it's broken down that way. In Singapore, I have, I think, five or six, Roger. I apologize.
six with the back.
Five. Should you go looking for one more?
Yes. See, I wasn't off on my number. Five currently, and we have the backfill.
So 10 between those two, which means 17.
Yes, 17 in L.A.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I did that without Excel.
No calculator.
Alan, I'm sorry, did you say anything else?
I said thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. The next set of questions that I grouped, Susan, is you okay we go to it?
Sure.
You had two questions that I thought kind of went together, and correct me if I'm wrong. Are there staff liaisons assigned to, for example, DNS anti-abuse organizations?
Yes.
Are there MOUs or data sharing compact with any, for example, the organizations, or are there any in place or contemplated?
Mm-hmm.
So I combined those because I thought they went together.
Yeah, Carlton actually added those.
Okay.
I thought they were good questions to look into.
Yeah. So all questions are good questions. That's always a start.
Yeah.
Contractual compliance. Like I said, I have a written response in this document.
Right.
But we receive reports from all sources.
Oh, okay.
Worldwide. Even contracted parties report on each other sometimes. Those are the best sources sometimes. But we receive from individuals, from organizations, and on that point, based on questions like this,
mm-hmm.
we started publishing a breakout of what kind of reporters do we have, and individuals, anonymous reporters, and which brackets they come under, and it's all on our metrics page, so that will help.
Okay.
Now, we do not list if it's organizations or not. We do not name.
Right.
But for the sake of this question here, you ask if we are assigned to. We are not assigned to any organization.
So I think what he was getting at, and, you know, I don't think Carl did he join at all, because if Carlton's on, he should. It doesn't look like he was able to join. So I think what he was getting at here, the, at least when I read it was, especially the first one, would you participate in the, you know, anti-phishing working group or something, APWG, or that might... You know, because Who Is an accuracy shows up in any sort of fraud, right? And so are there any industry groups that you would that any of your compliance staff actually participate in.
So anything that is held at ICANN meetings mm-hmm. under the ICANN umbrella, like when we go to ICANN meetings, there's a DNS forum or the security SAC meeting,
mm-hmm.
and it's open, we might go in and sit just to be more aware of the issues or the topics at hand, or even to learn and gain more appreciation of that area.
Mm-hmm.
We work directly with the office of the CTO, which is under David Conrad's area.
Right.
Most of the time, when it relates to the security and stability, because they deal mostly with a lot of the organizations that talk about DNS abuse.
Right.
So we work directly with them if there's any topic of issue abuse. Now, it does not mean that if we receive reports from any of the other organizations, we will process the reports and review them. Our goal here is that we are able to provide what I call a neutral service. Our function is very clear. It's contractual compliance. It's
mm-hmm.
based on the contracts and the policies. I remember when I first joined my first meeting with Bobby Flame and the security team, well, you need to give us a special red phone just for us to call you, or a special line. We're law enforcement. We're important.
Yes.
And I said, thank you very much for that request. But if we are here to cater to every specific area, there's not enough staffing in this world to do
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm.
I was brought in to bring a really unified and structured, disciplined approach to the compliance organization. And we created that approach. And I said to Bobby, I said, if you will give that a test, and if we fail you, I'll be your point of contact. Bring every issue to me.
Unfortunately, a lot of people, I think, probably.
Yes.
I've done that to you in the past.
Yes, but we had issues. No, but you remember, Susan, we had issues. We were growing. We
yes.
had growing pain.
Yes.
But today, we have the team who's very capable. We have SLAs we monitor.
Mm-hmm.
We have reports we look at. If they are, we call them TAT reports, turnaround reports, that the team has visibility to. And yes, we're human. We may make an error and miss a ticket, right? But I don't see that because they're very focused on it. And when it happens, guess what? We pay attention to it and address it.
Right.
So we have that standard approach. We don't focus as much on who is the reporter. We focus on what is the issue. Do we have a complete factual report filed with us? What questions do we need to ask reporter to give us more questions?
Mm-hmm.
Or if we have enough information, then let's work with the contracted parties through the process and keep the reporter informed and try to resolve the complaint. So we don't have assignments per se, like you're saying.
Okay.
But we have people who are interested in DNS abuse. We have people who are interested in the IP world. You know, our team is very diverse and may follow different groups based on their interest also.
So just to emphasize one thing, which is that we coordinate closely with David Conrad's team, and particularly on DNS abuse,
okay.
infrastructure abuse, botnet, CNC, malware, phishing, in working with them on DAR. I don't know if you've
yeah.
did, and compliance follow-up to that. We also reach out and have meetings with folks from MOG and APWG and some
okay.
of the other security. It's not necessarily who is focused, but that is a big part of getting that working closely with Okto, working with these groups and getting their input as well. And they'll come in on different types of complaints. I haven't seen them come in on who is, but they'll talk about, like in the DNS, not getting access to zone files.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or they're not getting, getting credentialed, so we'll work with them there. But,
okay.
Maggie's absolutely right to create a, you know, level playing field, but at the same time, don't want people to think that we're not closely working with these
okay.
with these groups, with Okto,
yes.
to know what's going on and
and in other areas take direct action, like DNS abuse.
So I think what he was getting at was making sure that you had a comprehensive view of the badness out there. And because it's very easy to, in any company, to go, this is my piece of the pie, I only do this, and I just don't even have time to look at the rest. But it's,
Yeah, so we have visibility to who the reporters are, and we have reports that come across from certain organizations, certain individuals, or even companies who, as you can imagine, with the growth of ICANN, there are a lot of different services now being provided.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different reporters that come to us. But yes,
Do you look at those reporters and
sort of draw conclusions at all?
I'll let Amanda answer. You deal with it a lot more closely than I do.
No, we definitely take an approach, like whoever's submitting it, whether it's, for DNS abuse, for example, whether it's LegitScript or it's some random individual, we're going to ask for the same type of evidence. We're going to follow the same process, depending on, doesn't matter who it is, or even other registrars, like Maggie said, do report on each other. We still get the same exact information that we would seek from an anonymous reporter, so...
So that really wasn't what I was trying to ask, at least, sorry.
Not very clear here. Was more of, and maybe that's in your matrix.
So is it like, if it's Susan Kawaguchi, do I jump on it right immediately?
No. It's more of to step back and go,
oh, this is interesting. All of a sudden, this one part of the world is reporting, lots of who is inaccuracy. Is that... a new scam going on, or not that you could control that, but that kind of intel really helps sometimes with
figuring
out, like if it starts here, it's going to spread.
Right. Definitely something we track. That's one of the things that we would talk about. Like I said, we have monthly meetings about trends that we're seeing.
Okay,
trends. Whenever something unusual pops up or trends that even the other team members see, they'll alert the SMEs, and the SMEs get together and discuss that. So it's hard to draw an example out of a box, but we'll discuss whether actions need to be taken with respect to that.
Okay.
And then, how I mentioned, you've got the operational meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the ops team may say, hey, we're seeing a lot of complaints. I'm just going to throw an example. A lot of who is inaccuracy complaints coming about X region.
Yeah.
So the team will say, oh, okay, well, let's take a step back. What's going on? Is it one registrar, multiple registrars? So there's you have to do some intelligence, not just come and reactively look at it.
Mm-hmm.
We still owe a response to every reporter.
Right.
But you also, whether it's, again, you've got the operations meeting, you've got the functional lead who's always looking through and QAing, and the SMEs who are observing the queue and supporting the rest of the team. And the team also talks, it's like, hey, what's going on here? And they kind of
huddle. Because just that gut feeling sometimes can be really important in combating abuse. Like, this is starting to smell. And then you realize,
they kind of connect.
We better, maybe if we looked at this, and maybe it's a registrar, maybe it's just really a bunch of bad actors somewhere, registering domains with bad information. But, because the bad guys are out there working in concert a lot, Or has a registrar just been overwhelmed by bad actors, So.
It's Alan. Can I get in a moment?
Sure.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
Who was talking before, a man, I think it's Jamie, I'm not sure though, saying you do have discussions with groups like the Anti-Phishing Working Group. Was that Jamie?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, that was me.
Okay, is that, now when you say we, is that your group or compliance?
So it is...
you're a superset of compliance.
That's a good question. So Brian, who's in Consumer Safeguards, has his own discussions. But they are different than the discussions that compliance has. Brian is, he is not explicitly focused on the contracts.
Mm-hmm.
he's focused on everything that happens around the contracts and trying to get discussions going around in the community. And so, he was at the FBI. He did security type work for Google and Microsoft. So he's got some of those connections, even predating joining of ICANN. But compliance also has their own. We have our own discussions with these groups. They're often want to share information with us that they are seeing on trends and things, and we have discussions about what it is we can or can't do under the contracts, and or we'll have discussions. There was, as I said before, there was a question about access to centralized zone file data, which some registries had different criteria for granting than others, and some of these security guys did not want to disclose who they were or wanted to make sure that they would tell them, but they didn't want it printed anywhere for obvious reasons. And so we work with them and the registries and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And, go ahead.
Yeah. So if I can try to summarize, Maggie and Amanda made it clear that you treat reports all equally regardless of where they come from. But you also mentioned earlier that you have meetings where you talk about trends and, how things seem to be moving. And clearly some of the more, I won't say more important, but the more prominent and trustworthy groups like Anti-Phishing Working Group also see trends. And sometimes it's very useful to get information from groups like that, which is not in the form of a formal report. But it sounds like those kind of discussions do happen. You may treat them all the same, but there are paths to get to trade information when it's appropriate from groups that.
So
you're not cutting yourself off from them just because.
No, absolutely. It's both. When Maggie says we treat them all the same, she's talking about complaint handling.
Yes.
And not showing preference or discrimination against or for any particular party or type of complaint. So that's one bucket, and those groups do sometimes come in as complainants or reporters. Then there's the second batch, which is just general intelligence gathering and sharing of information and relationship building, frankly, which is totally distinct from handling individual complaints.
Okay. So the document saying there are no compliance team members assigned to the organizations and you don't have formal liaisons, but there are communication paths with some of these more prominent and important.
Correct. Right.
Okay. Thank you. That's that's a really important issue because otherwise, in the name of equality, you're cutting yourself off from important information. So that's why
not at all.
No, okay, thank you.
I'm going to turn the next set of questions to Roger or Amanda, but the question number 11 I can address quickly is, do you contract with a vendor for compliance work? The vendor that we contract with for compliance work is related to the audit function. And the vendor, and I've provided the link, is KPMG. We've used them as a resource. There is no way we can hire that bandwidth of skills globally. If you read our audit reports, we receive over 20,000 documents in 10 different languages. So they have a model that exists globally. Mm-hmm. And we work with them, but the dialogue, the communication, the reporting, the quality reviews, and the strategic reviews is all done by our audit team here.
Okay.
KPMG is our partner, and they support the audit function.
So in the audit function, you would be auditing a lot of things at the registrar, right? But you would also be auditing their response to who is, or they're actually following the contract and validating and all of that. Okay.
The audit plan is published.
Okay.
And we, every time we conclude an audit, we publish an audit report. We list who was in scope of the audit report.
Okay.
We list what were the deficiencies,
mm-hmm.
and how were they, you know, what happened. We list them by like like the top five deficiencies or top five report, and it provides all that information. Who is always part of an audit.
Okay. We should take a look. I'm not sure we have that on that document on our list.
It's on our webpage.
Okay. Perfect.
Roger said he'll jump in on the tool.
Go for it.
Keep your voice up.
Roger, can you talk about the tools?
Okay, sure. Thank you. So regarding the tools, you had asked about what kind of tools we use, Susan. So just going to quickly run through some of the stuff that we actually use pretty much on a daily basis. So you're familiar with the compliance ticketing system. You've probably used that before, and you've seen our responses through that.
Right.
We have the compliance at ICANN.org email address that Maggie talked about. That's, communications with compliance team. And we also have internal systems that we use regularly. Like, for example, we have one that tracks who is availability of registrars, just to make sure that they are providing that availability to the public, so we'll get be able to check that and see that. We also have information systems like registry and registrar data that naming services portal that's being worked on for the registries and registrars, and then eventually compliance will be on that tool as well, where we'll be able to share the same set of data to work on complaints, and the contact information is all within one tool, and be able to use that easily and quickly and accurately. Right. We also have registrar information status, where we can actually check the number of domains that are under each registrar, registered by each registrar, and we also check the. We have the ICANN, whois.icann.org website, where we can use to check whois information. And we also are able to run Port 43 whois checks on domains that we have complaints about as well. So sometimes we have situations where we need to check the whois history, like a transfer complaint. We need to figure out who was the previous owner registered name holder of the domain, right? And we'll sometimes use tools like domain tools, where they actually have a whois history to look at, and we can use that as a reference. And also, we also check websites that belong to the ITU, for example, to compare the formats of the whois information that are published by the registrar. And, just to make sure that, okay, for this country, the telephone number has 11 digits, right? And we reference that against the ITU formats and make sure that we have the right formats for the country. And also the UPU, that's for addressing. And we check the UPU websites. Sometimes we use the country equivalent. Like, for example, we use the China Post system to verify if the address format is correct. So we do use multiple sets of information when we do process a complaint, especially regarding whois and whois formats, for example. So any questions on any of these?
Yeah, what are you going to do when that domain tools goes away after GDPR?
Yeah. We're
I don't really want to answer that.
You're laughing, Roger. Don't answer that.
Okay, so on the so you track the who is availability of registrars, so is that they're web based, as it, if I go onto their website and port 43, or one or the other?
That one is port 43, please.
Just port 43. So,
yeah.
If they also offer it on as a web-based search, like one-off, those you don't check that because that's only required.
Are we doing? Yeah, because we actually have to go to each registrar's website to do that. That would probably take up a lot of time. But we do sometimes receive complaints that, hey, this registrar's web-based Whois is not working. And then once we see that, we will investigate and we will try it out ourselves before we actually send a complaint to the registrar.
We'll also sometimes use Port 80 or the registrar's home web page to check and see if they're listing certain information they're required to have, because a lot of times with like sick Whois, we're trying to find out if it's the registry or the registrar's information that might be missing, so we use that for those
situations.
Or
okay.
Once in a while they do differ.
Okay. And so you said you used the UPU website and then and I didn't catch the name of the Chinese.
It's in the document.
It's in the document.
Yeah.
Okay, so I won't go too far into that.
Yeah.
But so when you have a claim of inaccuracy, you receive a report saying this is inaccurate, you have tools to be able to verify if it is or isn't inaccurate data.
Yeah.
Generally, we'll look to those as a guide.
Okay.
Those aren't necessarily the end-all, be-all to the answer, because sometimes that is, in fact, missing certain information. So we will try and use those as a tool rather than
not the final authority.
Right, exactly, final authority. Thank you. So we get some complaints, for example, there's not enough digits in the telephone number, and I don't know how many telephone numbers are supposed to be in Great Britain, for example. You can jump on the IT website, and they should have that information.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always really easy to read, so, again, it's just a reference tool. But, yeah, we have both of those available. And then generally, if since the contract allows for any other standardized formatting for addresses, we'll reference whatever the registrar might report. So we ask what type of other standard are you using, and then we'll go to that standard if it's an appropriate one or not. So that could be anything, really. That's up to them, because that's in the contract. So we kind of wait and see what they say, and then we'll reference that at that point.
Okay.
That was helpful.
The only other thing I think we also refer to would be the RFCs. That's more of a formatting issue to determine if certain things in the Whois are formatted correctly.
Okay. So you do enforce the formatting.
Right. That's more of a technical approach, but not so much as Whois inaccuracy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alan, do you have any other questions on this part?
Nope.
Okay.
The question in the document, I labeled it 12. It was previously submitted, but you took it away. But we've already addressed it.
Okay.
It's how we address it as functional leads and SMEs, big picture question. You had a question, what Whois issue have attracted the most complaints? So I provided you an extract of the dashboard at the bottom of the document so you could see it.
Oh, okay.
All Whois related matters, I just did a subset extract for you and provided that. But you also have the monthly dashboard and different sources you can refer to.
Okay. All right. I'll just take a look at that.
Roger, do you want to take the next set of questions, 14 and on?
Sure, Maggie. So, for example, if a compliance ticket for Whois inaccuracy comes in, And while we read the complaint, we realize, hey, this actually sounds like it's about an abusive domain, right? And, you know, he's saying that, you know, I cannot reach the registrar, for example, because the contact is wrong, or the phone number is not working, or the email is bouncing back. And we realize it's actually, you know, the reporter is actually trying to reach the registrar's abuse contact and trying to file an abuse complaint report with the registrar. And, you know, when we figure that out, we've seen this type of complaints over time, and we figured out that it's quite clear what they're trying to get at. So we'll actually send follow-ups to register the reporters to figure out, hey, what actually are you trying to complain about? You know, are you talking about abuse, or are you trying to reach the abuse contact of the registrar, for example? You know, so we try and understand more from the reporters before we actually start processing, because sometimes they may not know what complaint type is the correct one to use, even though we put in a lot of information in the learn more for that complaint type, right? So we have learn more for every single complaint type on our website. And basically, they may not have read it thoroughly, or they may have misunderstood something, because not every reporter understands English well. So we'll actually ask them certain questions to figure out what they're actually interested in filing a complaint about before we actually process the complaint. And usually we may actually have a complaint. We end up moving it from one complaint type to another to process, because we realize, hey, this is not actually about who is inaccuracy. It's actually about abuse complaint. Okay. So we'll actually do that. And you know, after we follow up with the reporter to get more information and a better understanding of what he's trying to get help with. So that's something we keep an eye on. And that plays into how we train everybody to know that multiple complaint types, because then once you know all the complaint types, you'll be able to understand, hey, this is actually not something about the who is inaccuracy of the domain. It's actually about something else, right? So once we see that, we're able to identify, ask the right questions before we actually process the complaint. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, because I can imagine you get all kinds of strange things entered into the tool. And is the tool in other languages?
No. No? In English.
The tool is used by compliance.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Now go ahead, answer.
Yeah, the tool is only used by the compliance team. Yeah.
It's not external.
But when we do have learn more for the reporters, we have multiple languages for those.
So when I look, I just looked for the who is an accuracy tool on your website. And is it also in, I was really thinking not your internal tools, but the
forms.
Complaint form.
Yeah.
Does that come in other languages?
No. No, the submission, it's all in English, like when you come in here. Now we have the learn mores that are available. I'm on the website.
Okay.
So we provide translation of all the learn mores so people can understand the topics. But when you go to the form itself and you start entering, it's in English.
Okay. Are they forced to, I don't even know how you would do that, but do you have to respond in English? Could they respond in their own?
So our team, collectively, we cover 9 languages.
Okay. That's impressive.
Yes. So while the complaint form is asking in English, and Roger is more expert at this than me, we've seen some complaints and some responses even from contracted parties, and some documents come in different languages.
Mm-hmm.
So absent one of us, usually we've seen it mostly in Russian, they come in, or Chinese. And Spanish, little French, we can cover a lot of French, but we've seen some French.
Mm-hmm.
But when they come in like this, the team already knows who to go to.
Okay.
and it gets translated. And when we are faced with people that are communicating in one language, like, for example, with the Chinese registrars, we find it more efficient to communicate locally with them. So what the team has done, all of our communication templates that guide the team in responding are now provided bilingual.
Mm.
So, and usually it's managed by that local, by the region who is mostly fluent in that language. But it's very, have we seen reporters in other languages?
Yeah. We do get some. If generally we can't, if it's a simple enough complaint, we can probably use Google Translate to figure out what's going on. When something gets more complicated, we'll go to the language person that we know to contact, for example. If speak Spanish, so we'll jump in and ask them to do customized responses. So it's provided both in English and Spanish. We do that in Russian as well, Chinese. But that's generally if we're only unable to communicate or we see there's a communication barrier.
Right.
A lot of the reporters are responding and communicating in English or, you know, able to provide the information and we can provide
right.
that.
Yeah.
Just when we see that there's an issue there, then we'll jump to the next step.
So please, Susan, keep in mind, this is Maggie for the record. So you have the forms online,
mm-hmm.
the complaint submission forms, and then the forms feed into the complaint system. And the system that Roger and Amanda were talking about for complaint processing,
mm-hmm.
it's only used internally by our team.
Okay.
But yeah. it has the capacity to also generate the emails to go out to the reporter to provide the update or closure and to the contracted party.
Okay.
Okay? And then once that process begins, then the response is coming. But they do not log in to the system. Our team is on the
right. Right, right. Yeah.
So I want to make sure that's it.
No, and we probably will want to dig in a little bit more on, like, what type of templates you use and things like that. If we can, but not tonight. I mean, we're sort of running our time here anyway. Unfortunately, answering questions also, you know, leads to more questions. So, and you know, for a global service, it seems like even though you have the translations, you know, it seems like maybe people should be able to find the form in their own language, too, beyond what you've got on the...
Yeah.
So. But I also understand the challenges of, you know, I used to answer all the domain at FB emails.
Yes.
Or at least have to read them and reroute them. And it's like, okay, let me Google this. Okay, this is what they're complaining about. Let me... Somebody else will be able to read this fully, you know, and I forward it on. So I understand that challenge. Okay.
So the next set of questions, I'll ask Roger to speak to them. It's 15, 16, 17, and 18. It relates to the roadmap, our preparedness and readiness to enforce the contract. So, Roger?
Yeah, thank you, Maggie. Roger, for the record. So when we were looking at these four questions, we were thinking about what, you know, what could potentially impact who is in the future. And we came up with four of them that we thought about, the PPSAI in privacy proxy area, the who is, GDPR, for example, and also RDAP, which areas that we thought might actually be impacting us in the future. And basically we tried to answer in, like, how do we change our workflows when things like these happen, right? So I guess that's what we were trying to figure out in terms of from your question.
Yes.
So, you know, usually what happens is first thing if a policy changes and we need to do certain things, first thing we do is review our, you know, the processes that we have, the forms that we have, templates, reports, you know, how we do our daily processing of those areas. And then we figure out if any of these things need to be adjusted to meet the new requirements that have been set out in the new policies, right? We make the changes and then we try and test it. And, you know, we try, usually trial run everything once or the, for a while before we actually implement it. And that's part of our testing process. And then once we are, you know, comfortable with it, we'll implement it. Now, we'll also, you know, take in feedback whenever anything comes, you know, when we do this, we'll also see if there's any feedback from a contracted party or reporters regarding these changes that we've made. And then we'll take into consideration these feedback and try and figure out if we need to make further changes in those areas that we've changed recently to be able to better do our work, right? And then we'll also do outreach activities where we need to. For example, we are implementing a new change in the way we do certain processes. We may actually do an outreach during an ICANN meeting, for example, where we actually tell the contracted parties, because we have the sessions with them, that, you know, we update them, hey, this is something that's going to change, this is what to look out for, what we're seeing, and because of that, we are changing some of our processes and asking for certain requirements. So these are the types of things that we might do for that purpose, to communicate with the contracted parties and keep them informed about what we're doing as well. And we may also be able to get some feedback from them regarding those changes that we're planning to do, and you know, maybe take into consideration all these their thoughts from their perspective, because we may or may not have considered those while we were doing that, right? So as I mentioned earlier, we have what we call a continuous improvement cycle, where we always have feedback from, we have every time we close a complaint, we actually have a feedback, survey feedback form for them to fill out for the contractor parties and the reporters, right? So we do get the feedback from them, and then we do review those instances of feedback and try and see if there's really something that we missed out, or if there's something that we should have done better or communicated better. We take those, we take these feedbacks very seriously, and, you know, it's reviewed by the ticket owners, right, the person to process the complaint, the subject matter experts, and the functional leads for the areas that they, that this complaint is about. So we actually have very thorough reviews of these feedback, so that we know that, you know, areas that we really need to figure out on whether we need to improve or change, or really something that we cannot do anything about. So that's something that we focus on. And also we participate in, you know, working groups and review teams, and we figure out if we have opportunities to improve our processes, and we have a heads up on some of the processes, because we, for example, we are, Owen is participating in the PPSAI project, and he's, you know, informing the team about progress and things that we may need to be informed about and taking notes on. I'm sorry?
That's really good and interesting. I mean, I will see ICANN staff on working groups, but I'm not really understanding why, you know.
It depends which phase it is in, if it's a policy development or review team. For example, the example Roger used for the PPSAI, it's in the implementation review team phase.
Right.
So all those discussions, we need to understand them. What Owen does is he comes back to our regular staff meeting on a weekly basis, because there are weekly calls. He says, okay, here's what we're hearing, here are the areas. And they are proactively, Owen and some of the SMEs in that area, proactively discussing it in anticipation of what might the policy be, mm-hmm. and how, what we anticipate kind of changes. Now, we do not start implementing anything until it's finally approved by the board.
Right.
That way, once the board approves it, guess what? We hit the ground running.
Yeah.
We don't have to assess anymore. Another example is I've been proactively following the CCT review team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't join all the calls. At ICANN meetings, I join the sessions. but we review the scripts from the meeting minutes,
mm-hmm.
report. And we had the opportunity by reviewing some of this, I knew exactly, but of course, went there and talked to them on multiple occasions.
Right.
I understood from them the need for additional granularity and reporting. So we did not wait till the report is final. We went in, and I worked with the SMEs, for example, who is inaccuracy SMEs. I said, the CCT review team wants the breakdown by the three categories. Let's assess what do we need to change for the team to start flagging them. The CCT review team wanted something else. So we are either actively involved. It depends, like I said, if it's an IRT, we're actively present. But and there are different team members assigned to follow it and come and update all of us. And that way.
That's really good news.
Oh, yeah.
Because every policy changes.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a compliance.
And we just shared an example here. If you want to know which policies and which working groups, if you, you can review, we published our quarterly newsletter and the annual report, and we list a lot of the stuff, and especially in the annual
report.
Look at the annual. We just published the 2017 annual report.
Okay, I have not read
we
that.
List the level of engagement we did at the different groups, whether it's participation, whether it's awareness, contributions, presentations.
Okay. I mean, I knew that you would go to working groups or review teams to provide presentations. I just didn't realize you were taking it back. And
we got
to
keep up with you guys.
Well, right now we're pretty slow on that.
So, I mean, I don't know if you, you guys talked
about the CCT.
Yeah, that you guys came out with. You implemented recommendations
before the
final.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
We're finishing the last implementation, which relates to PICs and safeguards. Because all this work, Susan, takes time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I mean by time is you got to continue doing your regular work while you're planning for the future.
Yep.
So the planning is important so we can capture the data. Now, some of the data we started reporting the granularity on, I cannot go back to previous years because we did not capture it in that format. So taking our transparency to the next level meant that the team behind the scene, when they are processing who is inaccuracy, because the form doesn't distinguish which one it is, so they flag it,
mm-hmm.
which of the categories. So you have to create the form behind the scene for the team to flag it.
Yeah.
And then you have to write the code to capture it. You have to write the interface to take that code and pull it into the business intelligence tool who's going to start reporting on it. We have to change the report to break that granularity. So there's a lot of work.
Yeah. No, I can.
But on this one, I mean, we
were
already aligned with the CCTRT. I mean, others in the community before the CCTRT came into being, we're already GAC and ALAC and others. We're already asking for more transparency. We are increasing that, you know, beyond what the recommendations, and we'll continue to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
If I may ask a question before we terminate.
Sure.
Terminate.
You're finished. Finish the call. It's not onerous.
Termination for compliance.
It's a good thing. You can go to dinner.
Already dead.
You all know about, you know, on a job interview, you get asked a question like, what are your bad points? And, of course, the classic answer is, I work too hard or I'm too dedicated or something like that. I'll ask the same question, but I don't want that kind of answer. What are you, you've described a lot of the things you're doing, and it sounds really good, and clearly I haven't been paying a lot of attention to compliance for the last couple of years, and a lot of things have changed, and it sounds like for the better. What are the areas where you're still having problems and you're going to have to figure out how to address them?
You've known me, Alan, for almost 7 years. I don't prefer to problems. I prefer to opportunities.
Okay. What are your greatest opportunities
that
if you don't address, you'll be embarrassed about?
I would be a problem, yes. what we have learned with since the launch of the NewG program, you know, and the competition levels go into the next level across many, many aspects of it, is there is a lot of creativity on how policies are implemented or interpreted on both sides, contracted parties and the ICANN organization, which is the ICANN community. So our group, I can speak personally, and I'll ask the other team members, please, and Roger. What I think is my greatest opportunity here as head of compliance is how do we take our game to the next level? Not to be ahead. It's more to understand and to anticipate what models happen. I mean, the contract is the contract, but how can we? It's about meeting expectations, and as you know, there are so many expectations. How can we standardize that and stay with the community on that? Jamie, Amanda.
I was going to say that's unknown.
Yes.
Probably one of the challenges that we're facing now, especially with GDPR and different models that we're looking at or the community is looking at and trying to figure out how to comply. Because we can't really react until something to react to, right?
Yeah.
So that's probably what at least I think about or I think.
Roger?
Do you have an opportunity?
It's Alan. I think I got most of what Maggie was saying. Her line became very, very garbled towards the end. Not sure what happened, but I think I got the most of the gist of it, if not the details.
So the only thing I would add, you know, obviously Maggie and many on the team have been doing this longer, much longer than I have. But one of the things that I've seen that's a challenge, not just in who is, but across the board, particularly with DNS abuse, is the language in the contracts. And sometimes the language is clear and sometimes it's not. Sometimes the language doesn't cover things that we and others who are concerned about DNS abuse would like to see there. And it's not always clear to me that universally across the community that's understood, that, you know, that the limitations in the contracts were understood. So one of the things that I hope that we will do through enforcement and outreach is provide clear awareness of what the contracts and the mission, frankly, cover and what they don't, to contribute to fact-based policy. So the community takes it and, you know, it's not, you know, compliance is bad because it can't force someone to do something that's not in the contract.
Yeah. Excuse me, this is Brenda, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but the audio from the room is very distorted. So are you, could we make the...
Well, I just gave a great speech, so I'm not giving it again.
It was pretty good there. So just try to speak closer to the microphone or the speaker. Thank you.
Sorry.
It's Susan's typing. I
think the Polycom was only good for an hour, and we've gone over it.
We have to put more order than that.
Yeah, so the last two questions on our response were previously submitted and...
I can no longer make out anything anyone in the room is saying.
Can you hear us?